You're listening to a podcast from Blogging Heads TV.
Hi, Mickey.
Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm back in LA after a long cross-country trip that involved going to both conventions. Ooh. And also going to Wisconsin to see Paul Ryan's challenger get clobbered. But, he got 16% of the vote. That's 11 more percent than I got. So
you would hope you would get more like 61, though, right?
I was hoping you'd get 30. Yeah. That Ryan cranked up the Republican machine, and they can turn out votes there. They're very good at it. They've been through four very close Walker recall elections type things, and they can get out their people. So I hope he runs again. I think he got Ryan to flip on a major position. He got Ryan to say he wouldn't bring up the Trans-Pacific Partnership trade deal in this Congress, which was a chance for passage. So he, even with his 16% of the vote, he basically killed TPP unless Ryan weasels out of his promise, which he may well.
Why would Ryan make a concession to a guy who's getting 16% of the vote?
Because a good politician panics before it's absolutely necessary.
A good politician and a bad public servant, yes. Does those things.
And plus maybe he thought TPP was doomed anyway. In fact, that's how he phrased it. He said, well, the votes aren't there anyway, so.
So, Mickey, do you think we should have introduced you, or do you think you maintain needs no introduction status? Because you so rarely grace our site with your presence anywhere. There are people, whole generations have been born and gone on to get Social Security and die since we did our first dialogue 11 years ago.
Isn't it better if I'm just this mysterious race who appears?
Okay.
Then
let's introduce you inductively rather than deductively by like establishing some data points about you, starting with, Mickey, do you support Donald Trump for president? Because I think a reasonable person who read your Twitter feed, and by the way, what is your Twitter handle? Kaus Mickey?
Kaus Mickey.
At Kaus Mickey. Any reasonable person would conclude that you support Donald Trump.
I don't think so. I think people have gone hysterical. I think the respectable friends have all gone berserk. If you say anything nice about Trump, they say, well, you support Trump, and they try to shame you. I have written that I haven't decided. I have 2 months to decide.
That is the one thing you've
and
written.
The same thing I did with Bush and Gore, and Trump has some great virtues. On the other hand, he seems a little crazy. I don't like the idea. I'm troubled by
that is the only thing you've written.
Point. So I'm trying to make up my mind whether the threat of Trump outweighs the promise of Trump.
That is the only thing you've written.
To do.
That is the only thing you've written that would leave one in doubt as to whether you're supporting Trump. Everything except for that disclaimer indicates that in your heart you support Trump. You and John Kasich are reserving judgment.
I definitely support him in my heart. The question is whether I support him in my head.
Oh, I see. So well, that's news. Are you now announcing that you support him in your heart? We're breaking news here.
I would like to see somebody, blow up the existing structure of government and have something better come in place. Not the existing structure, but the existing, alignment of conventional thinking. I like the idea that he's against foreign wars of regime change and nation building, as I suspect you do.
He's not against any of that stuff. He's totally unpredictable on the foreign policy front.
Unpredictable.
And as we learned last week, he may not be very predictable on the immigration front, which is the issue that's dearest to your heart.
Hillary is all too predictable, as Paul Wolfowitz just indicated when he said he'd probably support her. And she did support a disastrous intervention in Libya, so that's not a point in her favor.
I'm not a big Hillary fan.
Let me finish my catechism. He doesn't want to screw around with entitlements. He wants to restrain trade and restrain immigration to protect the people at the bottom of the working population of society, unskilled workers who do basic work and have to compete with immigrants and cheap labor abroad, and he wants to protect them. I think that's a good thing. Whatever happened to the Rawls Maximin principle? You maximize the well-being of the least among us. So that's what he's trying to do. And those
he's got a funny way of showing it. He's against raising the minimum wage. He's against raising the minimum wage.
He said he's against raising the minimum wage, and I the minimum wage is a small part of the problem. If you actually have a tight labor market, that'll do much, much more.
He's against Obamacare, which at the lowest, really low income levels, greatly expanded access to Medicaid.
Look, Obamacare is a mixed bag. It's expanded access, but the exchanges are cratering.
Right, so. but you're talking about the least among us, and the one thing it unequivocally did, except in those states whose Republican governors refused to let it happen, is expand access to medical care among really low-income people through Medicaid.
Well, look, that's not a plus in his favor. Medicaid shouldn't even exist. It should be folded into whatever system is available to the rest of the population. But until that happens, I'm all for expanding Medicaid. But the essence of Obamacare, we could have expanded Medicaid. The essence of Obamacare was these exchanges. And for years, while it was being considered, all the wonks of Wonk Blog and Vox assured us that no, there wasn't going to be a death spiral.
Right, that's one person. You're talking about one person here. Mention his name.
It might well be a death spiral.
You're talking about Ezra Klein, all the wonks of the two sites that Ezra Klein ran.
Yeah, it was basically Ezra Klein, but he has people writing for him. Sarah Cliff and Dylan Matthews, so you know, and a bunch of other people.
Yeah,
so
yeah. So, well, back to this whole business. If you're talking about the things you're glad. Well, no, hold on. The things you're glad that Trump would do. The whole idea of your inferring anything from what he said about what he will do was kind of blown apart last week. Where in one of the most gratifying moments in all of political history, on the very day Ann Coulter released her book In Trump We Trust, Donald Trump betrayed her trust on the very issue that she had said it was most important he not betray her trust on. Isn't that wonderful? And doesn't that just convince you that actually this guy will do anything and you can't predict anything about what he would do as president except that he will except for the ill-advised tweets?
Well, first, if he had just said, look, I'm backing off my promise to deport everybody, which was probably not a very smart or necessary promise to make. Nobody really cares about that. He would just have done it and he would have backed off and that would be done. Instead, he's entered this long, agonizing, idiotic process where nobody quite knows what he thinks. Is it just deportations? Is he softening generally across the board? So it politically, strategically, it's been bad for him. Luckily, it's before Labor Day. It was hilarious that he did it. He said he was softening on the day Ann's book
came out. And by the way, she reacted negatively, so somebody does care about that, apparently.
On the other hand, she reacted very well. She said this could be the shortest book tour in history. She slapped him upside the head, and he changed. So,
what is his current position?
He's giving a major immigration address Wednesday, where I hope he clarifies that there was a trial balloon today, which I think is bogus, that he doesn't want to build the wall. He wants to build a virtual wall, which is, as my friend Mark Kerkorian says, that's like bogus language, like making them pay back taxes, which indicates you're not serious. Every country that's actually tried to keep people out has built a real wall, not a virtual wall. So, but I think that's a fake trial balloon. But we'll find out on Wednesday. If he doesn't actually lay this issue to rest on Wednesday and say what he actually thinks in clear enough ways so that there's not this air of uncertainty and mystery, then he really is totally incompetent.
So what's the minimum he has to say on Wednesday to maintain your support, even though, of course, we know you don't actually support him? But you know what I mean.
He's already said he wants to, you know, as you know, Bob, the important thing is not so much will there eventually be an amnesty, but the timing. Do we put the enforcement measures in place before there's an amnesty? Once there is an amnesty or any legalization, the enforcement measures will be systematically undermined by the left and by the business community. So you got to get them done first before you do the amnesty. And that's the key point I would like to see him make. It's not completely clear he understands that.
And you would settle for E-Verify as a means of dealing with the situation in the country, border aside?
And you want a visa tracking system because more and more people overstay their visas. And it seems like that should be doable in this age where everybody's tracked every move they make.
And just quickly, what is E-Verify for people?
E-Verify
like
is a system where businesses, before they permanently hire somebody, can check to see if they're legal. There are some difficulties, business people have said, which is how do you, if you somebody comes up, no, you know, it's, this person doesn't seem to be legal. Can you fire them? Will they sue you for discrimination? The whole dance you have to go through as a business owner is, it has some peril in it, and they should eliminate the peril. But 20% of businesses use this now, and if it gets up to 90, 95%, that will shut off the job magnet for a lot of the legitimate labor market. So presumably that will reduce the incentive for people to come here legally to work.
So he's got to do e-verify, visa tracking. Does he have to build an actual wall at the border?
I would like to see an actual wall. I think that's important. You know, we have a specific problem. We have a problem generally with the world. We have a specific problem with Mexico, which is not without reason. They see a lot of our Southwest territory as territory that they've always come and gone from, that was maybe stolen from them. And they don't recognize the legitimacy of the southern border. Whether that's rational or not, there's a border now. And, you know, we need a wall. We'll send the message that, yes, we are serious about the border. It's also very effective. It's worked everywhere it's been tried. You know, there is hard polling data in Mexico showing that a majority of Mexicans think Mexicans have a right to come into the United States. Okay, do you think Mexicans have a right to come to the United States?
Me?
Yes.
Legally. I mean...
Well, that's the point.
What I'm against is, I mean, what I'm most against is the whole round up the 11 million and, you know, torment people who came here back when we were saying with a nod and a wink it was fine.
Sorry, what was a nod and a wink? I missed
for years and years, we basically said, look, even though it's technically illegal, you can come over here and you can line up in front of, you know, Home Depot and it's all fine. I am very much against now tormenting those people and rounding them up and stuff like that.
Well, I'm
not against border enforcement.
That's the party he's going to back off of.
I know. So, well, we'll see.
He's happy.
We'll see. But one question is, how much can he back off of without hurting himself politically? Because, you know, I got to think that, you know, it seems that his base, the Trump base, as opposed to the conservative per se base, includes a lot of people who might not normally vote, right? I mean, I've got to think they have to be pretty energized for all of them to turn out, right?
He can't back off of the wall. That's why it was so insane, this trial balloon this morning. Yeah, I think he can back off of deportations as long as he does all these other things. And the base, I think, will forgive him. That's what everybody's reporting. They go to the rallies and people say, sure. So he has a lot of goodwill with his base that he's frittering away. He should, if he's gonna soften, he should soften. He should say where he's softening and be done with it. Don't rip off the Band-Aid. Then put the Band-Aid back on so you can rip it off again.
This leads to the question of how you could even be flirting with supporting him. Because I know immigration is important to you, and I know he's the first guy to come along in a long time who's kind of singing your tune. But his sheer ineptness on a day-to-day basis as a candidate, I mean, most recently, this amazing Dwayne Wade tweet, I mean, doesn't it convince you that he would be a disaster as a president, whatever you think of any one policy?
No, it's certainly troubling. It's not a point in his favor. On the other hand, so far he tends to listen to his good people on immigration, Senator Sessions and Sessions' former aide Steve Miller, and maybe I assume Steve Bannon is giving him the same advice. And so he comes out in the right place, so he gets points for that. The flailing and the listening to the last person who talked to him. Is certainly troubling, and you know, maybe that'll ultimately be disqualified.
No, but I mean, it's beyond all this. I mean, let's go back to his iconic moment for me, making fun of a disabled reporter. That just, it continues to blow me away. If I had told you 2 years ago, someday you may consider supporting a presidential candidate who, during a speech, starts making fun of a disabled person, mocking a disabled person, you would have said no way. And it's not even clear which is more kind of disturbing, the lack of, like, political judgment there, the lack of self-control, or the sheer grossness of it. I mean, seriously. And you know...
I haven't looked... It's indefensible. My impression is two things would work. He had reasonable grounds to be really pissed off at this guy. I think he was denying a story that he... that Trump... you know, thought he'd written or that he's something he knew. And second, he was trying to entertain, okay?
Well, he had grounds to be pissed off. The guy was just telling the truth.
I forget what the situation is.
The guy was accurately conveying what he had written in a piece.
I don't know. There's a.
It was one of these cases where Trump just made shit up, and the guy called him on it, and that's inexcusable. And so Trump starts mocking his disability.
Anne has a long section on this in her book. I don't know.
I'm sure that'll straighten it out.
I don't have the book handy, and I haven't read it, so I haven't gotten my copy yet. So I didn't look into that.
The Dwayne Wade tweet. That's just like within the last 72 hours. What's going on with that? What's he thinking even? What's in his head? How does he think that helps him?
I confess, when I saw that Dwayne Wade's cousin had been killed, was my first thought, oh my God, this is horrible, an innocent person has been gunned down? Or was my first thought, I guess Trump is right about the horror of the innocent?
Oh, right. No, I agree that
humans... I don't want to say which was my first thought. The other one was my second thought.
Talking about the political judgment and lack of self-control. I mean, do you think it was a politically well-advised tweet?
No, it's stupid. He's done it twice.
That's
in a
what
row
I mean.
Now.
What kind of president would this guy make if you have to put him in a straitjacket to keep him from blowing up the world?
Do we elect presidents because they're wonderful people and compassionate?
I'm talking about the political judgment and lack of self-control, not the compassion. I'm talking about the how ill-advised the tweet was. When you're president, that stuff matters.
Well, I assume they'll stop him tweeting if he's
who?
President.
Who? The same people who can't stop him now?
They have a large national security bureaucracy.
And all of whom he can fire.
Look. These are all points against him. He has a bunch going for him, too. Well, the prospect of 4 years of Hillary is incredibly dreary.
Well, dreary, but the world is still there in the end.
Right. No, that's her virtue, but that's about it.
Okay. I consider that a considerable virtue, actually, the continued survival of the human species. But I realize immigration's important to you, and maybe you're right. Who's to say which is more important? The alt-right, you mentioned Steve Bannon. Steve Bannon? Have you met him?
I've met him. I wrote four articles for him because they got me into the conventions, and I liked them, and so
You like Breitbart. You're coming out publicly.
I like Breitbart himself, and I like the people who are at Breitbart now, and they're on my side on immigration, and they do a lot of good work. They also have this alt-right strain that I sort of avoided.
That's post-Breitbart. That wasn't there when Andrew Breitbart was alive. Is that true?
Not that I saw. I mean, I didn't know Andrew's deepest thoughts.
It wasn't on the site, I mean. That's the Bannon era, the alt-right.
That's a very good question, and I think you're right, but I'm not sure. You'd have to go back and look at. It's mainly this guy Milo, this
truly horrible human being.
I have no opinion on Milo. He's certainly good.
And it shames me that one of my two dogs is named Milo. I'm thinking about changing his name.
You know, I stay with him, But now that the alt-right has become an issue, and it sort of should be an issue, they're out there. They do tend to support Trump. Trump has sort of given them Trump's candidacy. Even if Trump doesn't support them or embrace them, they've taken shelter under his candidacy to try to go public. The intellectual leader seems to be this guy Jared Taylor, who runs a magazine called American Renaissance, and bizarrely. Did you see James Fallis' tweet on him?
I didn't.
Somebody raised Jared Taylor, and James Fallis said, he's a lovely man, I knew him in Japan, and he wrote a great book about Japan. So since then, they've diverged ways. It was an interesting human moment on the web, of which there are all too few. He has now come out with what is basically, hey, all you alt-right, all you people who are now interested in the alt-right now that Hillary's attacked, this is what we stand for. And it's very clear, and it's not what I stand for. First it's white identity politics, and I think identity politics in general is bad, so why should white people emulate this this tendency that we don't like? Second, it says that, only the most offensive sentence is, only people who are of the stock of the people who founded our country are capable of maintaining its institutions, which is sort of a racialist view of
kind of
what's
yes, kind of
was of what's necessary to maintain our institutions, which I don't buy. I do give some credence to the line culture takes, which is cultures can be anti-democratic, and you want to be careful that you assimilate whatever cultures you admit to you know America that they're assimilated to our way of life. I think that's a valid argument.
I don't know which major cultural element is in danger of subverting our democracy right now.
Well, none of them are in sufficient.
What is Ann Coulter worried about? Muslims?
If you I'm sure she's worried about Muslims. Her book talks about Hmong and Somalis and. In general, its argument is that diversity is not strength. So that's her argument. But that Taylor goes way beyond that. Taylor says it's race.
In fact, the alt-right first came to my attention on Twitter in the form of anti-Semitism. I mean, a couple of months ago when I first heard of them, that was what was associated with them.
It is associated with it, and it seems completely bizarre. I understand why if you're living in the United States, you would be pissed off at the major groups that get affirmative action and preferences, and you say I'm passed over, so a African American or a Latino can get a preference, and that annoys me. But anti-Semitism seems like a total irrational legacy prejudice.
Isn't it almost enough to make you suspect that it's kind of a broad-based bigotry as opposed to some logically rigorous ideology?
No, because it's very rigorous. Why would they cling to this anti-Semitism? It's anyway. How many of these people are there? Not many. None of the stories on the menace of the alt-right.
But it is relevant.
I think they're in the tens of thousands.
But look, if Donald Trump hires a guy who calls him chief executive, which may or may not mean he's running the campaign, this is a whole other issue. What would the org charts look like in a Trump administration? But in any event, he's one of two people who may be running the campaign right now. And if Donald Trump hires him, he is answerable for the guy's ideological associations. And by your own account, it seems to be the Bannon era that has welcome the alt-right onto Breitbart.
I don't know that he's alt-right so much as Milo. He knows that Milo's
well,
a star.
Well, he's running the organization that has embraced Milo.
I have to read Milo's article. I've been avoiding it. I don't know to what
the article. He's a horrible person. I mean,
well, whether he's a horrible person or not, I don't know. He wrote a piece about the alt-right, and I don't know whether he embraces it fully or not.
You mean Bannon's article.
No, Milo's article. I don't think Bannon has written
about it. Look at Milo's whole record of stuff he says.
Well, what has he said?
Like lesbians are people who can't get dates with who guys think are ugly, and so they become lesbians.
That's standard sexist frat house. That's not alt-right.
Well,
but that was what was
expect better in our political leaders.
That was crazy about Hillary combed Breitbart for alt-right headlines, and the best she could come up with. Is a headline that said "Birth control makes women ugly."
I don't think they did a good job. I don't think they did a good job of combing the headlines because whenever I went to see, in fact, just today I saw this was maybe attributed to maybe something Bannon himself said. It was either Bannon or Breitbart, and it was like maybe it was on Breitbart. It was like Muslims don't come to escape persecution; they come to America to impose their persecution on Americans. Now, come on, we know that's not true of 99% and probably way more of the Muslims who come here. That is just rank bigotry.
It's
saying, look, this was a generalization about Muslims. It was saying all or at least most Muslims who come to America want to impose their religion on America. You think that has any kind of chance of being true, Mickey?
Well, there is this troubling poll that showed a large... I figure it was a majority or minority of the Muslim population here supports Sharia, whatever that means.
Sharia is the same as Orthodox Jews or wanting to have a wedding in accordance with Jewish whatever.
Okay.
Sharia itself has nothing to do with imposing anything on people by itself.
Okay. Anyway, it seems to me there's a long way from that to race realism and saying that only descendants of the white stock in America can maintain our institutions.
Breitbart has got creepy...
It's a generalization about Muslims. But there's just not that much that I've seen that shows that Bannon and certainly Breitbart, you know, have that view. Certain Breitbart did have the view, which I disagree with, which is, you know, that the terrorists have smacked us and we have to smack them back twice as hard. That's the view you've been fighting back for most of the time we've been doing this, which is, you know, why if we hit them for every time they hit us, we're playing their game and we're probably making more terrorists. So that would be my view.
Actually, I mean, if you could smack terrorists per se, wouldn't bother me so much. It's like it's all the people you inadvertently smack in the process. But
right, well, but they're always those. So
there are right.
That view Breitbart had, but that is not an alt-right view. That's just sort of a standard, sort of this is Munich all over again view of the war on terror. So you can tar Andrew with that, but I don't think you can.
No, not Andrew. I'm talking about Bannon. I mean, look, Trump is answerable for Bannon. He gave him that. He hired him. He gave him that title. And I'm talking about, whom Bannon has embraced. And he's embraced Milo, and he's embraced everything on that site.
Do editors embrace everything that's on their sites? I don't think that's true.
Well,
anyway,
in the case of Breitbart, where the whole site is clearly a unified propaganda campaign and not like let a thousand flowers bloom philosophy.
It was split early on between Cruz supporters and Trump supporters.
Well, those days are over.
Some of the money people who were behind him, the Mercers, I believe, were Cruz supporters, not Trump supporters.
By the way, little asterisk question, like Matt Drudge was apparently in the tank for Trump early on, as Observer said, and of course he has a long association with Breitbart, first the person, Breitbart himself got his start via Drudge. Do you know why Drudge? I mean, Drudge is kind of an opaque character. Do you know why he would support Trump?
I think he agrees with what Trump's trying to do. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's certainly my impression is that. You know, it's an anti-globalist, that would be the umbrella position, skeptical of free trade, skeptical of free immigration. I don't know quite what other, Drudge has a bunch of interests where he's way interested more than other people. Anything to do with abortion, I know he's very concerned about, but I don't know why Trump wouldn't be your candidate if you cared about stopping abortion. So I think he's probably for Trump, the same reasons that I'm for Trump. It's just he's probably made up his mind.
Mickey, you know what you just said?
I know. I know what I just said. I said, but then there are the reasons why I'm against Trump. So I'm
no, I don't think you can extract that possibility from the sentence you actually uttered, Mickey.
Let's talk about. I'm allowed one.
I'm sending that clip to Jim Fallows, Mickey. He's been hounding you on Twitter.
Oh, he'll be very
happy. Get you to declare.
What? He's so serious about this.
Jim's a serious guy, man.
It's so weird. Anyway, he's the good cop, Bob. Alter's the bad cop.
John Alter? You're saying John Alter's a bad cop?
And Fallows is very gentlemanly. Alter just plows in like a tank.
He's an old friend of yours. He's trying to help you. Mickey, I'm trying to help you. We're all just trying to stage an intervention.
They're trying to help me save my career.
Yes, among other things. So, you want to turn to some things we may actually agree on?
We've passed our half-hour mark, so let's just quickly wrap it up.
Things we probably agree on. I think Trump has a real chance of winning still, personally. You probably do, too.
That's what I was going to turn to.
Yeah.
It seems to me he does have it's hard to see where, if you look overall in the polls, he has a chance of winning. He's only like 6-7 points behind.
And the gap is slightly narrowed over the last 2 weeks, which has gotten very little comment.
If you look at Slate, at state by state, it's much harder for him because he's behind in Pennsylvania.
But today a Pennsylvania poll came out showing him only 3 behind in Pennsylvania.
Really?
Yeah.
Then it's all possible again. Okay. Never mind.
So it is possible. And plus, I mean, just anything can happen. Julian Assange says he's got emails that he knows will embarrass Hillary that he's going to, anything can happen. It's a crazy world. And people keep saying, it's never happened that a candidate 5 points ahead in late August lost. Well, if this year has taught us anything, it's that this year is unlike all other years in the history of presidential politics.
There's the thesis that things move faster now than they did, associated with our friend Bruce Feiler. And that means that there's a whole lot more drama that they can pack in these last 2 months than, say, in the Dole Clinton race of '96. There's the Epstein sex scandal. He hasn't brought up Monica yet.
The Epstein sex scandal is just Bill, right?
Well, there's a
Trump. Everybody assumes Bill is trouble. That won't be news.
Well, but they're underage women involved in the Epstein sex scandal.
Well,
so
that would be a day's headlines. But that's not going to become, like, clear.
That's a new wrinkle. But they claim that Trump is somehow involved, too. So all that remains to be seen. And maybe there'll be a mutual assured destruction pact to keep it. But Trump has done much. I expect him to be much more effective against Hillary than he's been so far. Maybe he's saving it till after Labor Day. But there's the whole Monica thing, which a whole generation of people maybe doesn't know that much about, and which will rattle Hillary. That's the point. There's a whole trade thing where, you know, he hasn't made an issue of obvious things, which is Buick is now selling a car that's made in Japan. They're always worried that GM is going to start making all its cars in Japan. Well, the foot's in the door, and I'm sure they're going to make money on this Chinese made Buick. So.
I think he's gotten the mileage he's going to get out of trade, and he's got his own little problems there, like all the Trump labels that say made in China and the fact that he hired these Polish workers and so on.
That's time for hypocrisy. I mean, trade is still a big issue in Ohio and in Pennsylvania, and he's got to win those states. Byron York thinks he should make a big deal about the death spiral of the Obamacare exchanges. I don't know about that, because that appeals to sort of voters who he already has, which is the people who are poor enough to be worrying about the Obamacare exchanges. But it also involves all sorts of freelance writers and people who have to go in the independent market, and Obamacare is not a pleasant experience for them. So there's that. But I expect him to methodically take her apart, and he hasn't done that. But maybe he will start.
Well, I think, you know, he's just not showing himself to be very deft in general. But I do think, you know, it's just an all bets are off year. Hillary emails, you know, I mean, there could be every week there could be a new little anecdote involving the Clinton Foundation that sustains that theme. There's both the 15,000 emails and the Julian Assange emails. There's the possibility of a terrorist attack that this time Trump might handle more deftly than he handled Orlando. Who knows?
Anthony Weiner could tweet a picture of his bulging junk while he's in bed with his child. I mean,
surely that couldn't happen. Can you believe that guy? We saw the documentary. Have you seen the Weiner documentary?
I have not, but you should. But you, that's just my phone. We'll ignore it. But you should. You should like. What Weiner was doing, he was telegraphing to this woman he was sexting that he had high male parental investment. He was saying, "I'm a good match because I'm investing this time in my child." That just made him more attractive.
Maybe
he had read The Moral Animal, and he was using the Bob Wright sexting technique.
Proven Bob Wright sexting technique. It's funny. The documentary kind of humanized him a little in my eyes for the first time. You know, here's a never-before-told anecdote. Somebody who was working for me at one point a couple years ago lined up. Anthony Weiner agreed to come on Blogging Heads and talk to a certain person, and whom I won't mention. It was all set. And I found out about it. I said, "I'm sorry, this site has some standards, man." So
What kind of promoter are you?
I know. I'm sorry. But you know, I will... I'll go to heaven for this or something. I know the site will be a failure, but I will go to heaven.
I mean, he wasn't going to sex right there on Blogging Heads.
It got me in a weak moment. Look, I'm not known for my promotional skills.
That would have been fantastic.
I'm not known for my promotional skills, but this site has standards, okay? And now I feel vindicated. I mean, you know, I'm sorry, but his child is in the picture? What? This is
Well, the child crawled into the shot. What was he supposed to do?
Anyway, enough about him. The other thing we might agree on is media bias against Trump.
Yes.
Like, there's a lot of it, which is okay with me. In fact, I just worry that it's so over the top that it won't work. It's so obvious, you know. I mean, I think it's fine. I mean, two things. First of all, if Trump is going to consistently trash and insult a group of people, he has to understand they're going to want payback. And this is another reason not to want him to be president. He seems not to understand that you can't trash the media 24/7 without them wanting payback. But second, I think, look, it's an interesting kind of experiment in what happens when virtually America's entire establishment, you know, elites left and right, set out to stop someone. Can they do it? And I'm not sure they can. And that's why I just kind of worry that the media bias is almost too overt.
Well, it's certainly overt. It's certainly unprecedented. It's basically all hands on deck. They all think, if I don't do everything I can to stop Trump, I'm responsible for the incineration of the planet. That's basically seems to be the mental attitude. And the result is, as you say, sort of hysterical. Even good reporters, like at the New York Times, where they say, this is unprecedented. He's thrown pluralism into the dumpster. It is so ridiculous that I do think it's less effective than if it were more subtle and insidious. I agree with everything you just said. There are not that many people who agree with you. I mean, Kinsley does, but there's a whole group out there who think the press has been doing Trump's bidding, which is insane.
Well, it's just kind of obvious, and it's the reason that the possibility of his winning is, I think, underappreciated. I mean, like, right, when they do a political analysis story, like, there are all these stories about how, wow, things are so hopeless for Trump that Republicans are trying to figure out X, Y, and Z. And they always call these Republican analysts who they know hate him. So-and-so worked with Mitt Romney, and he says this about Trump. I mean,
Stuart Stevens and Mike Murphy think this strategy won't work for Trump.
Right. It's pretty glaring. I mean, it's sometime if we have time, we can do a longer analysis on the nuances, like the New York Times approach to it versus the Washington Post approach. They're different.
They
do that. What?
You have 1 minute to explain to me why they're different.
Well, it has to do with the different web strategies. The Washington Post has become more of a clickbaity site, I would say, and they're better at getting on the news quick and doing these you know, webby headlines like, you know, Donald Trump's very bad, awful, horrible week, you know. And the New York Times is sticking with the kind of standard New York Times type political analysis story, but it's the shading within the story. I guess I would say the angling is more overtly anti-Trump more often in the Washington Post, the very lead paragraph.
The interesting side, just in terms of web strategy, it's not bias, is The Hill, which is doing really well in sort of beating the pants off Politico, which has much more, a higher media presence. And they just do hundreds of little stories. Every time Trump sort of coughs, there's a short story, Trump just coughed. Mm-hmm. It's not biased so much as it's just like inundating with a lot of little stories. And
yeah, and
Post doesn't seem to be onto that.
And I should say that in general, people overestimate the extent to which de facto, well, what seems like bias is really bias as opposed to being sensationalism or chasing traffic or whatever. And I should concede that some of what I'm talking about may be more about chasing traffic than bias.
But they never do pro-Trump sensationalism, or only very rarely.
Yeah.
So they, you know, one day they will do an article, here's why Trump's going to win. You know, they'll do that once a month, and they'll do 50 articles saying this is why Trump is, you know, an unprecedented loser. Yeah. So the interesting scenario, and we really will end after this, is there's a 269 versus 269 possibility, which would throw it into the House of Representatives. And at that point, it's organized by state. The House votes state by state. And is it possible that Paul Ryan would sell out Trump and throw it to Hillary? That's the interesting possibility in my mind.
Whoa, you're thinking way ahead of me. So, anyway. Should we have time in the future? At some point, I want to address with you the biggest question. Like, is this just like a nationalist versus cosmopolitan, you know, versus, you know, globalization thing that's going to play out for a long, long time to come and restructure the parties fundamentally, which I think may be the case.
But we'll, I resist that, but it could happen. I mean, yeah. it's certainly the most useful framework for figuring out how Trump is different from everybody else.
Yeah.
But anyway, okay.
So anyway, this was fun. And if we've established nothing other than that you do, in fact, support Trump, I think it's been a very valuable exercise.
Don't you think we established that, Bob?
What?
We haven't established that.
You mean the part where you said the reason I'm for Trump didn't? Never mind. I'm sorry. I'm sorry. I won't call that clip to anyone's attention, Mickey. Least of all, Jim Fallows and John Alter.
I would like his issues on which he gives voice to issues that haven't been raised to achieve a wide audience.
Trump?
In that sense, I'm for him. And I may end up voting for him. I haven't decided.
Okay. Well, we will certainly stay tuned. Thank you, Mickey.
Okay. Thanks, Bob.
See ya.
Thanks for listening to Blogging Heads TV. You can help support this content by remembering to like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter. You can subscribe to all Blogging Heads episodes or to a specific program by going to our subscribe page at bloggingheads.tv/subscribe. There you can sign up for podcast downloads via iTunes or Stitcher, or you can subscribe to our email and we'll send you an alert every time we post a new episode.